Radio.
Jimmy Crane's a nerd. Jimmy Crane's an improv nerd. Jimmy Crane's a nerd. Oh, Jimmy.
Here we go, everybody. You are listening to another episode of Improv Nerd, and I'm your host, Jimmy Crane. And we've got two great sponsors for today's episode. The first one is a great new app called the Improv Tonight app. If you keep asking yourself the same questions over and over, like, when did my friend say their improv show was? Or what time is that Second City show? Now you can find out with the Improv Tonight app. Improv Tonight helps me easily find out show times and information on Chicago's best improv theater. It's got all of my go-to venues like I.O., Second City, Annoyance, and more, with new theaters being added all the time. Best of all, it's free. Take my advice and download Improv Tonight today. Available for iOS and Android. We're also sponsored by the Harold Ramis Film School. Do you love comedy? Have you toyed with the idea of making movies? Well, if the answer is yes, the Harold Ramis Film School is perfect for you. Located at the Second City in Chicago, this year-long program focuses on comedic filmmaking. Students are immersed in comedy training, film history, writing, and film production classes. Students will graduate the program with produced content such as a screenplay, sitcom pilot, hour-long pilot, or short film. Visit RamisFilmSchool.com for more information. That's RamisFilmSchool.com. And don't miss your next opportunity to study with me in my award-winning Artist Low Comedy one-day improv workshop on Saturday, May 7th. For more information, go to my website at jimmycorain.com. That's jimmycorain.com. Today, we put together a very special episode of Improv Nerd for you. As you know, in the last couple months, the topic of sexual harassment in improv has really come to the forefront. It's been exposed, it's been debated, it's been discussed on various social media platforms, it's been covered in many internet articles and by improv bloggers, as well as major newspapers. We recorded this episode on Thursday, February 18th in the afternoon at Green Shirt Studio in Chicago.
Jimmy's a nerd, he's a nerd, oh yeah, Jimmy's a nerd.
Today we're talking about the topic of sexual harassment in improv. If you haven't heard, it's become a very hot topic in the entire improv community lately. Nina Metz from the Chicago Tribune reported in January that this issue came to a head when Sharna Halperin made a comment on her Facebook page that opened a floodgate of impassionate responses. Women recounted unwanted sexual advances, inappropriate remarks, and fear of retaliation if they spoke up. So in this episode, I want to break down the issues into two main parts: sexual harassment between someone in authority, a teacher, director, someone who can cast you in a show, and students. And then later, we'll talk about women feeling uncomfortable in classes, scenes, shows, etc. I've assembled an excellent panel today of all different points of view. This is by no means the beginning or the end of this discussion. It's just a continuation. So let me start by introducing the panel. Susan Messing. She teaches improv at the Annoyance Theater in I.O., DePaul University, and the University of Chicago. She was a founding member of the Annoyance Theater back in 1989, and she is also an alumni of the Second City. Ben Caprero practiced law for 10 years and now trains corporations and their employees in best practices for avoiding legal risk with regard to sexual harassment, diversity, and other issues. Laura Bowers is a student and performer of Chicago's improv community. And she enjoys sharing her unique voice as a Muslim American woman with the comedy world. Nadia Greenspan is a psychotherapist in private practice who works with people in performing and creative arts, actors, directors, writers, and yes, improvisers. And Julia Weiss is a member of the Second City's national touring company and the improvised Star Trek podcast. She's also been a regular contributor to the Paper Machete and featured in Right Club, Lit Mash, Slut Talk, and other storytelling shows in Chicago. Welcome, everyone, for being on this special episode of Improv Nerd.
Thank you.
Hi, Jimmy. Jimmy.
All right.
Nice to support comedy.
There has been a lot of concerns that have been thrown into the pot of this in the last month. But I'd like to separate the different issues out and talk about them one at a time. First, I want to talk about the issues of teachers or people in authority, such as coaches, directors, who can put someone on a Herald team or put you in a show, propositioning or having sex with students. So, Ben, I want to start with you. When that happens, does that qualify legally as sexual harassment?
So if I were going to provide a legal analysis, there's a couple things you'd have to look at. When someone in authority in a corporation, and this is sort of our best basis because of the most cases come out of the employment context, if someone in a leader in a corporation were to proposition, let's say a manager to one of their subordinates, that would be most likely a clear-cut case of sexual harassment, and that legal position is based on Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. So there's a clear law there that establishes it. If it were to happen in higher education, that would again be a clear case of sexual harassment. It would be based on Title IX of the Higher Education Act, which prohibits discrimination against somebody on the basis of gender. And sexual harassment is a form of discrimination. Now, at a place like a theater, legally speaking, it's maybe a little bit unclear because there's not always an employer-employee relationship, and theaters typically wouldn't be covered by Title IX. So that would be, legally speaking, someone might have room to argue either way. I don't want to focus too much on the letter of the law, though, because I think we all agree that regardless of which law applies, someone in authority taking advantage of that authority to gain a sexual relationship or a romantic relationship, either way, even if it's a consensual relationship, in any other context, it would be viewed as inappropriate and it would be viewed as harassment. And so, the law is important if we're in court, but we're not in court, and we should think about the spirit of the law and not some of those technicalities.
So, Julia, how common is this kind of behavior going on now?
Well, I don't think I could quantify it, but it's incredibly common. I think pretty much any time a group of women in this community get together, eventually this conversation comes up. And generally, it's the same story, the same people, the same experiences over and over again. It is a problem that hasn't gone anywhere and doesn't seem to be going anywhere.
And Laura, from a younger person's perspective, when this happens, there's a lot of fear. You know, you're out at a bar, a teacher comes up to you. What's the fear of saying no to that teacher? What are those repercussions?
The fear is that you know you're about to sacrifice everything, your love of improv, your opportunities, just the friends you have, any path you might have in the improv community the second you say something. And I can't tell you how many times I've gone to the bathroom in between classes, and there's always that discussion going on between a hushed group of girls. And it just has that feeling like you're hiding in the bathroom when there's only women and someone's talking about an uncomfortable experience they've had.
What are they saying in those conversations? Are they saying names? Are they saying, watch this guy? What are they saying?
More and more they are saying names. I think that we're getting really bored with protecting these assholes. I'm sorry, I hesitated because I wasn't sure if I could say assholes. But
you can say anything you
there's
want.
There's no other word. It's, you know, the emails taking like a really close interest in their work, which when you're a young improviser and a teacher takes this vested interest in you, it feels good and they know exactly what they're doing. And then that interest in your work turns into stay for a drink after this show. I'd really love to pick your brain. And then that turns into like late night texts and it's scary and you don't know what to do. These guys like to throw around their ability to invite you to auditions, really make you feel special by saying, you know, we have these auditions coming up. They're full, but I can get you in. They make you feel special and they manipulate the fact that you're feeling good about your work to then later pounce. And it's so disgustingly common. I mean, I've heard stories about members of the Herald Commission drunk at IO holiday party, not letting a girl leave because they want to dance with her and throwing out as a joke, oh, you can't leave, I'm on the Herald Commission. But then that being like, that feels real to the woman who's hearing it.
And for people who don't know the Herald Commission, they're the people at the IO who make the decision mm-hmm. Who gets on a team, who gets off a team.
Yeah.
So that would be considered an authority position.
Yeah.
Susan, you've been around. We've been around together for a long time. since the 80s. Yeah. When you hear this, how do you feel about it?
Sadly, not surprised. I was just saying in the other room, you know, women are losing more and more even basic reproductive rights. Doughy white men are telling us what to do with our reproductive organs, and initiated more bills last year to regulate Ouija than anything else. Thankfully, I've clot, so I'm fighting for my daughter. So there is what has changed, I think, since I started was I feel like there is an autonomy of our own bodies that is missing, and lines get fuzzier and more crossed, and more people have joined our community. So I think sometimes people think, oh, there's only 45 people in this community. And I'm like, no, there's at least 4,500 people in this community. And I think after a while, people think, oh, well, our dating pool is here. And I'm saying, not necessarily. And I think a lot of people who have had behaviors in the past that they thought were simply, it's just part of the dating pool, are learning very quickly, no, go to another continent. And there are other people who feel very much so, like, I think a lot of the women felt for so long, just suck it up. It's part of being in comedy. Suck it up. And it's not. It's you just, if you don't feel like you have enough space to breathe and study, and you've paid great money, and you need to feel safe in these situations, then obviously there is a huge problem. I thought by modeling solid, strong lady behavior in my classroom and on stage, I was doing my job, and also making sure in class that the women felt absolutely protected and free to do what they wanted to, and that yes and doesn't necessarily mean you have to fuck someone in a scene. As a matter of fact, I have many defenses and escapes for that kind of shit if I don't feel like that day. So I want people to feel safe and happy in studying their joy. Good job, Jenny.
I know.
I think females feel less and less safe, and that's not okay.
So I want to ask you, Nadia, because I think you talk about safe, and Julia brings up a point. I've read everything. I'm obsessed by this topic.
Why?
Because I'm in the community. Mm-hmm. As 14 years old, I was sexually abused. So it brings up also, I'm triggered on so many different levels. The names have never been discussed in any of these articles. Are we doing anybody a favor by not naming names? Are we protecting the perpetrators?
I don't know an answer to this question, Jimmy.
Okay.
And it makes me feel so sad and hear so sad that you find this topic to be so personal because of your own personal experience.
Mm-hmm.
And in that way, what I'm relating this to is that you were a child and you didn't know how to say no. You didn't know how to put healthy boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like a lot of these young women are struggling with putting healthy boundaries.
Yes, and...
and figuring it out where they feel comfortable and where they can take up their own authority and say no and how to do that. And I was a very lucky student in Susan's class, and I have observed you over and over. When you say you're not doing enough, I think you're doing a terrific job in modeling what these boundaries are. I have learned a great deal from you in class on how to turn the scene over, how to take up my own authority, how to be able to say, no, this doesn't work for me, but this is what does. Would you like to play with me in this? You were the one that taught me that. And unfortunately, I do not think that there's enough teachers out there who teach young women and men. I work with both young women and men who struggle with setting boundaries. And I think that's one of the first things that we have to discuss.
You're shaking your head, Julia. You're agreeing with what Nadia is saying?
Yes, I think that, you come through these classes and you make, a name for yourself in the improv community, and then maybe you're trusted then to teach a class, and it doesn't mean that you have any idea of what you're doing or how to reach people or how to protect people. And I've seen time and time again teachers and coaches completely miss behaviors that they are responsible for curtailing. And then the onus is on the person who's already been made uncomfortable, the person who doesn't feel safe. Your coach has missed it. Your teacher has missed it. So what trust do you have in them to even go to them? And then when you have the added problem of some of these teachers and coaches being perpetrators of, if not sexual harassment, but sexist behavior, then I mean, the whole thing kind of falls apart. We don't have, I think, strong standards for teachers in this community. I think there are a lot of people who are in charge of shaping young improvisers who truly have no business doing it. I think I had Susan for level two, and I feel very lucky to have had Susan and to have the other teachers that I had at IO, but someone else gets a different teacher and they're getting a whole different experience.
Ben, you were going to say something?
Yeah, I just wanted to respond to something that Julia said. She made a distinction between sexist behavior and sexual harassment.
Mm-hmm.
And legally speaking, of course, there is a difference. But what I often tell corporate clients is that harassment generally does not happen in a vacuum. Like one day somebody comes to work and they do something horrible. That does happen. Of course it does. But more often, it starts with smaller interactions where people are disrespecting each other, not in a big, egregious, obvious way necessarily, but in just kind of smaller ways that we send signals to each other. I don't respect you as much as I respect my partner here. And the problem with letting those kinds of things go is that behavior gets reinforced and it doesn't get corrected and it gets worse and worse and worse until something that at least legally would be considered harassment occurs. And there's no reason to believe that improv is any different than the corporate world. People come to improv just like they come to their job with whatever cultural baggage they bring with them. And we are doing them a disservice if we don't let them know that it's not okay.
Yes, Nadia?
I can't agree with you more, Ben. And I think the very important aspect of it is this space, which is not the big space between what is meant and what is understood. So when you said there are little attempts to disrespect someone or little attempts to push somebody's boundaries, it is also up to the other person to know themselves and to know what they feel comfortable doing. And there are very strong women in improv who constantly learn about themselves, like Susan, and who can state in no uncertain terms, I do not like that kind of behavior and I'm not going to stand for it. And I think that we're not teaching young women in improv enough to do that, to advocate for themselves.
I think that there is a difference between, I've said this before, but the difference between an uncomfortable character and an uncomfortable improviser is night and day. Mm-hmm. An uncomfortable improviser immediately makes the audience disconnect and worry about the improviser so they can't enjoy comedy. At the very least, these people are pooching comedy, these guys. So they might want to consider that at a most base level if they haven't evolved as a human being. That's, yeah.
Laura, you were going to say something.
Yeah, I completely agree with you, Ben, saying that we are doing a disservice by treating the improv community different than any other space. And professionally, I'm a social worker and I've been teaching the past few years. And we have seminars and programs for the young women in our schools that you have every right to be safe and to have your boundaries respected, and that authority isn't something you should be intimidated or threatened by. And I think for some reason, whether it's the fact that the improv community is a creative space or that it's an adult space for the most part, those rights just kind of go out the window. And even I enter into spaces after teaching seminars like that without that same feeling of this is my right to feel comfortable. It's almost like I'm begging for an opportunity in this space and I have to kind of deal with whatever comes my way.
I think that there's a lot of baggage that, I mean, we all bring into this work. Unfortunately, I think a lot of the baggage that a lot of our male counterparts are bringing in is this idea of like they've grown up the underdog and they're, you know, the protagonist in their own coming of age movie. And the prize at the end of those movies is a girl. They aren't coming to this from a place of like, I'm working with my equals. It's, here are these dudes and we've really struggled hard being the funny guys. And now here we are. And oh, look at all of these trophies that are here waiting for us to tell us what big, strong, funny men we are. And so we're not coming at it from a point of equality. And to go, yeah, I think that casual sexism is the biggest threat to this work, because that is what paves the way toward harassment. There's a quote from Uncle Vanya that I think about all the time.
From Uncle Vanya.
I was born on the South Side. I don't know.
I can't remember which translation it was, but it is a really great one.
I can translate it to her.
It's the world will not end because of war or famine, but because of the petty little violences we inflict upon each other every day. And I think that that is exactly what's going on.
Let's get you in on this, Susan.
I think the theory of collaboration and the respect is such a great theory. And so often it is missed in the practice of what this is. Remember, we have a different society now. If a guy wanted to come on to me, in the past, they would literally stand outside my window like Stella, and blessings to their soul, they did. And at the time, I was impressed. but now you've got sexting and texting and dick pics and the internet, and guys are learning about healthy sexuality in quotes through online porn that they can manifest within a second if they use their parents' computer. I mean, this is a very creepy society, and a lot of our guys haven't been able to learn healthy table manners because it's the new normal for them. Women are still kind of things. Now, don't get me wrong. I still see guys who I substituted a class last Monday night where there were 9 guys in the class and 1 woman had subbed in, and they were so excited about having a real girl to play with. And their enthusiasm was so sweet and pure about it. Not like, oh, good, something to rub up against. I mean, a lot of these guys, I have to say, are so nervous about this because they did have good intentions and good hearts. And they feel now that they're going through a landmine, and what is going to happen to content? And how are we going to protect women and still be able to have this sociological study of the human condition, good, bad, and ugly, which is what we get to explore in improv. So, I mean, the first, right after the shit hit the fan, I had to go teach a first class at The Annoyance, which is uncensored content. So I was just sitting there going, oh man. So, you know, it was rough. And I'm not saying that, you know, every theater I work at, IO, The Annoyance, and Second City, sexism, racism, and homophobia has never been considered funny, because our job is to, if it is expressed, that is through a ludicrous or a laughable character so that we can evolve as a society. I mean, that's part of what we get to do. Is comedy gets to be some of our greatest teaching moments. So I feel like the men right now are kind of, poor things are kind of adrift in some ways.
I think if you want to approach this work sincerely, if you want to do it well, in a meaningful way, and we're talking about sexual harassment today, but this also applies to issues regarding race and religion and
intersectionality, the whole nine yards.
Yeah. If you can't stop for a moment and think like, well, how have I approached it? What have I done? You know, I took classes at all the institutions in the city, and I'm pretty certain I never sexually harassed anybody, but I am certain that I made an insensitive choice in a scene, in a class. And it kills me to think that I did, but I'm not immune to it, and nobody is.
But are we allowed to make mistakes? Not only as players, but as teachers.
Yeah, well, I think that failure is an important part of this work and this process. I think, especially as students, you know, you're coming in your early 20s, and all you do in your 20s is fail. Like, that's what your 20s are for. I think that there is...
How about your
30s? How about your 50s?
I think that mistakes are higher.
Yeah.
Yes, there's obviously room for mistakes and fit. Like, those teaching moments are vital. I think that the problem is sort of the defensiveness, the unwillingness to learn from those moments. Mm-hmm. I don't think that we live in a community full of bad guys. I think there are a few bad guys and a bunch of great ones. I think that men and women are taught from before we can even speak to have a certain level of distrust of women. We aren't really taught to respect women. We aren't taught to see women as full, equal human beings. And so men and women are doing a lot of learning right now. And so certainly there's room for failure. But we have to stop making excuses for those failures. And we have to stop making excuses for the people failing. We can't keep protecting habitual offenders. We can't keep working with them. We can't keep having them teach. We can't keep giving them the opportunity to make choices, because that's giving passive consent to their bad behavior.
It's tacit consent.
Yeah.
It absolutely is. But I have my struggle is with the people who haven't seen their behavior for years and years and years and have received little slaps on the wrist, maybe the threat of a lawsuit once or twice, but go back to being who they are.
Okay, you know I'm going to talk about this addiction part of it. Is there?
Yes.
We know in improv, certainly, there's drug addiction, drinking, and if somebody was drinking or having drugs or whatever, they would go and get help. Is there, I want to ask you, Nadia, is there a part of this that is untreated sex addiction that these institutions and the community are trying to protect?
I would very much doubt that improv as an institution is trying to protect sex addiction.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to speak about it without knowing individual cases.
Mm-hmm.
However, as a general rule, sex addiction could be viewed as eroticized rage.
Mm-hmm. Meaning?
Anger towards yourself that is misdirected or directed towards other people, especially towards women. And anger comes from fear, from insecurity, from not knowing who you are. So somebody who usually appears as an arrogant asshole, inside could be a little boy who's just craving validation, affection, mirroring that he has never gotten growing up in other places. Now, does that mean that we have to excuse this behavior, saying this is a little boy who is craving somebody to be nice to him? Absolutely not. But at the same time, this conversation has to be open. As Ben said, he has found himself making some choices, perhaps in improv classes, and so have I. I remember being in your class, Susan, and having that unfortunate male genitalia waxing scene that went astray. And I felt like a perpetrator to this poor guy who was laying on stage. And I remember how you stepped in and you said, you know, if you put those shoes on, you got to wear them. And you carried that scene on.
He was okay, though.
He was completely okay with
that. That's why I let you continue. Because you yourself went, this is, I feel bad for this human being. And I was like, human being looks fine right now. I don't know if it's sex addiction in this situation as much as I think people love the chase. I think there's an adrenaline rush when you're in pursuit of something. I think that it pulls out endorphins that make you feel good and alive. And I think some of them might come from actually, you know, what they perceive to be good intentions. And just, I like you. And I'm saying, yeah, but you could like someone later when they graduate from this program or when you don't have status for something that might affect their professional, you know, being.
What is your thoughts on this, Laura?
I agree with that. And then you also just hit on another point that I've been thinking a lot about, this idea of checking with the human versus the character in the scene. And that's what improv is all about. The second you walk out on that stage, you make eye contact, you check in with that partner. And the fact that improvisers, the people who are most skilled at that skill, are just going over that. They're not checking in at all. They're missing all these signals. And there's all this talk about, are we going to lose good content or the ability to kind of process these things through this art form? But the reality is you can still do that, but you have to really check in and actually care about the other person's comfort level. And it just shows a lack of compassion entirely.
Yeah, the whole conversation about, like, is PC culture ruining comedy is, like, so boring to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because at the end of the day, what that conversation ultimately tends to be is, how come we have to let these other people play too? And I don't think anybody I don't think anyone in this community wants us to be precious about language and
or feel content.
Yeah, I think we just want to come into the playing space as equals and recognize that we're not going to deliberately punch down, that we're not going to make people uncomfortable. We're not going to like call people out as, you know, a fellow performer, that we're going to come to this as two equal players creating a world together. And I think that that is the thing.
You're nodding your head, Nadia.
Yeah, it's, I agree with Julia and Laura. And I think that it's a wonderful advice and wonderful practice to check in with your partner on stage. However, especially for novice improvisers like myself, I very often think that it's not enough. It is necessary to have this conversation before you even get on stage, mm-hmm. of what your your expectations are. I mean, it reminds me of the conversation. I have three daughters, and one of them is 15 right now, as a teenager. And I had last month, I had a conversation with her about when is a good time to have sex with someone. And I had to think about it myself. And I thought, you know what, maybe when you can sit across the table from someone fully clothed and talk about having sex without embarrassment, naming body parts, telling the other person what you would like to have happen, how you want it to end, what would feel good to you, what your boundaries are, then maybe you're ready to do it.
Where were you when I was 15? Mommy. Oh, yeah, that's great.
Where were you when I was 24?
I think we also recognize in the yes and culture that I think sometimes people take that very literally. Yes and does not mean if a guy starts a scene and says, fuck me, bitch, that you have to fuck them. I can easily say, oh, I'm so sorry, sweetheart. I just did the rape kit and it's kind of like a fluoride treatment. You have to wait like 3 hours, you know, before you eat. Or I just had your baby 4 weeks ago. You're going to have to wait 2 more weeks, tiger. You know what I'm saying? Like, you do not have to say yes because somebody said do this. You don't have to do that. You have to agree to the reality. The reality is he wants to fuck you. The reality might be I don't feel like fucking you. You and I have had many scenes.
Many scenes.
Many
scenes.
Get the fuck off of me, Jimmy.
Right, right. Like, yes.
I don't know how much that's Jimmy. But
all of it is Jimmy. All of it is Jimmy.
I do think, though, there are people who I improvise with regularly who, if they initiated a scene that way and I didn't, I was like, fuck off. I would handle it within the reality of the scene.
Yes.
But I think there are people who, if someone who I did not know did that to me, if a man I did not know well did that to me in like a mashup or something, I would give him a teaching moment. And I think that sometimes the sanctity of the improv scene is broken before you can even say yes or no to someone's initiative.
But let me ask you this,
But they end up looking ludicrous because you would have had an aghast look on your face, like, who the fuck are you?
But
now comedy's done.
Right.
At least for them. It's done for them.
But let me ask you this. When you mean a teaching moment, can you explain?
Well,
ripping assholes, taking prisoners.
Yeah, being like, this motherfucker who initiates this way will either leave this scene still a motherfucker who would initiate that way, or an embarrassed little boy with his tail between his legs. That is what I mean by it being a teacher.
Are you in character when you do that?
What I'm questioning right now is whether or not there are times when the safety of the space has been broken. Do I still have to play by the rules? And I think that we're in a place right now where I don't think you do. I think that when
you can hold on to your character and say no.
I think you can, but I also don't know if you have to.
No, I don't think so either. If you truly don't feel safe.
Probably
in a space.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's just the idea that I'm like.
Is there a physical component to it, or is it just a verbal component? Meaning
both.
And that's what I want to explore here. If somebody's all over you and says they want to have sex with you, to me that's different than if they just say, "Hey, in a scene, let's have sex."
Well, I mean, I think that it was sort of like the we were dealing more with like abrasive language,
aggression,
that aggression on stage. Like if someone's like, "Do you want to have sex?" then I'd be like, I wouldn't feel disrespect. Yeah. Like sex isn't the problem. Mm-hmm. The word sex is not the problem. The act of sex is not the problem.
Is it the hostility?
It's hostility.
The aggression.
And it's
the aggression. Okay.
I think that there's a lot any artistic community, but in improv, you see a lot of what is right below the surface. There's always way more than just the characters on stage. And I think a lot of times hostility will come out that is a human being making themselves big, making themselves powerful, trying to dominate the space, trying to put you in your place, make you smaller, make you submissive, make you passive. And I think that that is sort of what we're talking about
here. Has that become your experience? Has that been your experience?
It has at times been my experience. It's not always my experience.
Right.
I'm a powerful player.
Of course.
I've had guys not like that I'm a powerful player and try to put me in my place, especially earlier on when I was I feel like over the last several years, a lot more people have started to identify as feminists. But when I was first starting out, like, that still wasn't a very popular thing to be. And I'd have dudes call me out on stage for being a feminist, unwarranted.
You mean you want equal rights? That's crazy.
I know.
What's wrong with you?
Man's
world.
You know, because is this happening in the lower levels?
I was going to say, you know, to hear Julia say that she would give somebody a teaching moment is obviously, I think, what needs to happen. But she arrives there after, you know, several years of establishing her confidence as a performer. And I'm going to presume having experienced this, more than once. I think maybe the critical moments are for those people who are in level one. Mm-hmm. And improvisers make all kinds of easy, shitty choices.
Yep.
Some of them are sexual aggression.
Remember
when we started out, there was a rule, and it was.
It's not a rule, those who what seduce. You mean the Elaine May thing?
Yes. Can you repeat it?
I think that's something like if all else fails, seduce. Which that's an Elaine May trick. She's a very strong feminist. I don't think she would go around and say, that's what you do, and it's certainly not an improv.
But it was something to have in your toolbox. That's how I learned that tool.
I did not
learn
that tool.
All right.
Because being seduced by me is being seduced by a gnome at the bottom of the scene.
Well, I like being seduced by you in scenes. I just want to let you know that.
You just like gnome sex.
Yes, I have a problem with it. I'll admit it. Nadia, you were going to say something.
Jimmy, you know that probably better than anyone. You and I have a history. But
yes.
My early experiences on stage and improv were leading with my sexuality. And that was a very easy choice.
But it's also empowering sometimes.
Yes.
On stage and off stage, integrity are different.
And at the same time, there is a very big difference in the way female seduction is viewed versus how male seduction is viewed. Male seduction is often viewed as aggression, whereas female seduction is often viewed as means for connection.
Well, male seduction is use of power. Female seduction is sort of arrest of power, right?
Female seduction is a use of power as well.
Well, my concern is this, that we're going to take sexuality out of improvisation.
Don't worry, Jimmy, it'll stay. Don't worry, Jimmy.
I can count on you. I'm worried about that because I think it's very important.
But see, here's the thing, Jimmy. I just did a scene with Norm on Tuesday.
Norm Holly.
And we played two virgins who are 19 years old, who had been homeschooled. We kissed in the scene. It was our second kiss ever.
You physically kissed?
I mean, nothing big.
Okay.
Because obviously it was the second kiss I've ever had, so it was about as awkward as it gets. He finger blasted me horrifically. I squeezed his penis like an anaconda because I had milked cows. I mean, it was just the worst, most awkward sexual scene you could see. Like, some people told me they were visibly upset, and probably every man in the audience was like, oh, my dick, my dick. I mean, granted, I used his pretend
You know stage combat.
Combat, Jimmy. It's called object work.
Okay. It does sound like combat.
But we were exploring sexuality from a horrifically ignorant perspective, both of us. Plus, you knew the improvisers were okay. Like I said, the difference between if Julia grabbed my boobs on stage, I'd be perfectly fine. Why? Because I would be. But then again, I'm not everybody else. Just because I don't have any boundaries on stage doesn't mean that no one else is allowed to have them.
Nadia.
Oh, I disagree with you, Susan, 100%. What? I think you have wonderful boundaries, but you know where your boundaries are.
Tell me.
And they are far out there.
They might be
a few miles away.
Yes.
But this is what's important. You know yourself, and you've studied yourself, and it's taken you many, many years to get where you are right now. Mm-hmm. But you know where your boundaries are. So when somebody grabs your boobs, that is a mile away from your boundaries, and that is just fine.
And it depends on who, I'm sure, as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. My assumption, here's the hard thing. In life, you're in a relationship for 6 months, and then somebody says, here's the creepy card, and you go, you know, you pass on that, and they're like, oh, okay. And you're like, you took that? Okay, I'll give you this one. That's life. You earn trust. The hard thing in improv is we come into this venue assuming trust. But that also then it takes us to the next level, which is assuming trustworthy behavior. So I've always said we assume trust, but now I go to the next level. That's why I said to you, Jimmy, you know, when I interviewed you, I said, do you ever want to consider being a therapist? And you said, no, why? And I said, because you go to dark places in your class.
Yes, I do, yes.
What do you have in terms of, you know, like procedural things in place to protect your students who might be triggered or things are weird or whatever the case may be? Because like I say, like with monologues, you know, unless you would only declare this to DCFS or your shrink, don't bring this to my class because I'm not a trained professional. Everything else, embarrassment, diarrhea, go for it. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? But I, you know, if you want to. But I think sometimes we push them in the art of, and I think this happens in acting classes as well, where they push you to declare something you've never declared before. Well, there's a reason they didn't declare it. And I don't know sometimes if we as teachers are always trained, and I've had many years as a teacher, even I'm not necessarily trained for that kind of stuff.
But speaking of training, because you've had a lot of training, you've done it for a long time, I've done it for a long time. Is it because of this expansion, all right, and teachers aren't getting trained? You know, when I worked at the Jewel, I had to have training to learn how to bat. When I worked at Eddie Bauer, I had to watch videos and train to do that. For improv teachers, now that it's gotten so big, is part of this problem they're not getting training?
Well, anyone who teaches level two has watched me teach for 8 weeks. However, that doesn't mean that I have some sort of, or in the past, now I have to address this, but in the past, I assumed that their behavior was above board and that they understood that even if they don't think they're so status filled, there's enough status for a young improviser there that they have to be very careful in
Great.
Some ways.
Laura, what do you think? Do you think there's enough improv training out there?
Laura never wants to take my class.
Well, Nadia, you mentioned before that, okay, yes, you know, improvisers should know to check in with each other and read each other's comfort levels, but the discussion has to take place before that. And that's so true. We mentioned, you know, as a character, you can always choose to turn it around or make a teachable moment. But what if whatever happens in the scene is a trigger for you? What if you don't have enough experience to turn the tables and advocate for yourself in that moment? Then who is protecting you?
I love that you said that because I had a teacher, I taught a workshop at Lake Forest College, and the teacher is assigns a lot of novels. And he has to ask before his class now, which is something he never did 10 years ago, but he asks now, if anybody would like to individually come up to me and talk about triggers that you might have privately, just because I'm not interested in you know, you having to discuss this publicly, that if you have some triggers, that I would be more than happy to let you know if a certain book might not facilitate this or something, I might even change it in the curriculum. So I've never thought in the past I've had to do that. It might have to be something that is discussed now. Because I say to people before class starts, if you have a physical condition that prevents you from lifting people or people shouldn't be jumping on your back or whatever the case, please bring that up. I never thought before the shit hit the fan on this stuff that I might have to say, if you have any emotional triggers, that you really think might impede your progress in class if it is brought up, please bring them up to me privately and I will be more than happy to accommodate you. I don't see that often in class. I think most of the spaces that I teach seem to recognize that there's certain things that protect it. For example, at IO, it's character environment and teamwork I'm dealing with. At the Annoyance, it's uncensored content. So people who walk into uncensored content pretty much know that we might go somewhere dark and creepy,
right,
but that you, the improviser, will absolutely be, you know, protected. I just don't know anybody who has a lot of triggers who would want to walk into a space like
Julia, that. Training. Do you think there's enough training out there? Do you think this is part of the problem?
For teachers?
Yes.
No, I don't think there is. I think that, I mean, there's a really wide berth between like experience level and ability between some of the teachers that we have like in this community. And I think that we throw people into teaching too cavalierly. I don't think that we make people prove that they even have a firm understanding of the work before we let them teach classes. And I think that
That's hard because because everything's expanding so
quickly. Yeah, absolutely. I think that the fact that we're only just now thinking of having training for teachers and people who are making decisions at theaters about sexism and sexual harassment, the fact that this is only just now happening because some people got called out on the internet is shameful, and it shows why we have a problem, because this should have been a preemptive strike. And to speak to triggers and creating safe environments, that should that should become a goal as well. Like when we're, and I think that Irene Marquette was starting to do a lot of stuff like that in her classes, speaking at the beginning of sessions, talking about how, you know, improv is an inherently feminist act. We come into this circle as equals, and she would let people anonymously come to her with concerns, things that they had experienced in other classes, things that they wanted to make sure she was aware of. And I think that when we open up improv to truly be inclusive instead of just like lip service inclusivity that we've been having for a while, when we really say, hey, there are stories and experiences of the human condition that are important that we can only get from having women, people of color, LGBT improvisers,
disabled
improvisers, like, we need you here because your stories are important. How can we make this a good space for you? We need not to scoff at it. We need not to have sort of like this
rolled eyes.
Oh, the ladies are talking again, like straight white dude mentality. No offense to straight white dudes. I love me some straight white dudes, but like your experience is not the default. And
you are becoming the minority.
And you are becoming the minority. And you have to recognize that artistic spaces do get to be a little hippy-dippy and sensitive, or else you're not necessarily doing it right.
Nadia, you were going to say something?
I read an interview with Irene a couple of weeks ago where she says that she starts her classes talking about unconscious, which made me very happy because this is one of the, I think it's one of the concepts that's been missing from improv. We get this advice very, very often, and I've heard it on your podcast, Jimmy, many times. Just be yourself. Be yourself on stage. Most people come in, they have no idea what that self is.
Mm-hmm.
So talking and exploring, to me, and maybe because I'm still new at this, improv is such a privilege. I get to do this. I don't have to do this. And especially for teachers and instructors, I think there's a lot less reverence that I see to this craft that I've seen before.
Reverence in terms of the teachers?
To be able to pass on something that you know and feel so passionate about to other people and get somebody else to watch them grow and express that part of themselves, that emotional side, to learn something about themselves, that just seems so wonderful and exciting, and it turns me on sexually. Yes, it turns me on. I love that.
And unfortunately, it's turning on the men too.
Yes.
So I think that's the problem.
Yeah.
Maybe it's all improv. Maybe if we took improv out of the equation, men would treat women with respect.
I don't mean that.
You see what I'm saying? It is a turn on. It's like the opportunity to connect with people. And so if someone takes it over the line, sometimes they might not recognize that it's over the line because they're just so happy in a world that you spend so much time alone at the computer that you have this opportunity to actually connect with a human being. It doesn't have to be catfish. You know what I mean?
Ben, you were going to say something.
Yeah. So building off of both what Nadia and Julia said, it's embarrassing that we're only now having training and people are only kind of waking up to this. And I do think that for a long time there was this attitude of, it's only improv. I've heard people say, I don't think a theater should be run by a Fortune 500 company. And, the thing is, the reason why, and not all companies do this well, there are some who do it very well, others are miserable, but the ones who do it well, oftentimes that was informed by litigation. And so companies ultimately got the idea, it's expensive for us to do this, we need to not let that happen anymore. What they found after they made those changes, though, was like, holy shit, we perform better.
Yeah.
We've got better perspectives. We've got different voices coming to the table. We're able to solve problems in a different way. This, while we approach from maybe a cynical standpoint of we got to keep our expenditures down, this has actually benefited us. Improv is no different. It's just another group of people. The problem is, though, is that improvisers are not in the position necessarily to call out wrongs. They're not in the position to hire a lawyer. They're afraid to do all those things. So improv has been allowed to exist like this little clubhouse where people with power can exercise that power.
And if you want to stay, suck it up.
Yeah, and I think that is sort of the message that I know when I was coming up, a lot of the women that we looked up to, and we would hear things like, oh, I've never experienced sexism. These younger women just are too sensitive and blah, blah, blah. It's like, it's sort of kind of honestly how I think of Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton is this powerful woman. I think she is an important icon for feminism, even with every problematic thing she's ever said or done. And it's because she came up in a time where you had to play by the rules and you had to prove that you could do this while playing by the rules and saying the things that like the dudes would say and doing it like a man. And I think that that's sort of the example that that we had coming up in improv, sort of this like you want to hang with the boys, you play by the boys' rules.
Well, we used to say, some of the women would say, we're playing by the rules and the men are just playing and doing whatever they want. And we would say, who's getting off? And say the men, and go, okay, so when we want to collaborate in the way that we do, I've been in all women's groups and I play with guys all the time. So, and they play differently. And they're like, but why do I have to like jump in this way? I said, because these guys are playing right now like rabid ferrets. So play like a rabid ferret right now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I've also been with guys who've let me do exactly what I want to do. They might play like rabid ferrets, but they just let me pose.
I just want to let you know, when I play with you, I just follow you. I know I don't have to do any work. I can just show up, hear what you're doing, and just follow you.
Oh, that's good.
You know?
I think now, though, we're in a place where it's like
it's
we're
different.
Changing the rules.
Yep.
Instead of we're like we don't have to honor this old system. We don't have to suck it up.
Yeah.
We don't have to pretend that we're not uncomfortable. Like we get to say, no, this should change. And
if it's not working, it's not working.
Yeah.
But I want to just point of order, and I'm sure this is going to be an unpopular thought here, so I'm going to throw it out anyway.
Go for it.
From my perspective, and I don't know if you would agree. Tell us a little about the culture for women when we started. Women have made huge, huge progress in improv. I know they have a ways to go, but in 1989 when we started, if you had one woman on your team,
it started
that was
in 1986.
1986.
When the Annoyance started in 89.
Okay.
And at the Annoyance, it was 50-50. Made quite sure of
that. And that was
the women were stronger than the men.
Yes.
Sorry, men.
But if you look at Saturday Night Live today, the women are, the last 5 years or 10 years have been much stronger than
Yeah, but you're still fighting that stupid shit like women aren't funny. You know, no matter what, it's boring. It's just a boring conversation all around, especially for women to listen to.
But have women made progress?
Yes, they have made huge progress. When I first started, having a woman on your team was a coup. They were just like, you have a girl? Like, to play with, because it was, Aya was only 5 years old when I started. So, and whether it's because Sharna was a very strong personality or not, I do know a lot of women came in and a lot went out. And
well, I don't think Del Close didn't help it either.
Del did not help it. And sadly, I was of the kind of attitude of like, Del might not like women, although people have said to me, no, Del liked women. He just didn't like stupid women, whatever. But he didn't have enough in front of them. But I was so flattered that Del liked me that I was just so happy to be a fly on the wall of the boys' club. That and I think that a lot of my makeup has to do with masochism. So I don't think
well,
I
was fine. But you know what? You were not treated well. It had nothing to do.
You mean with Sharna?
Yeah, early on. I mean, you this, and then when you got to Second City, you had on the main stage, you had a rough go. I mean, you've really, you know.
Well, I learned very quickly. I mean, I learned, for example, I never did Turco or wash dishes or any of those kind of things. So when I was put on main stage, I'm sure there were a lot of guns pointed towards my window, even though I had been improvising for over 12 years by then. I think they said, well, if you're going to bring anyone right now and Mick is your director, sure, well, let's bring Susan. But I don't think some people were thrilled with it. And I just brought in a lot of respect. And I think a lot of people took advantage of that. But it doesn't matter. I learned, it was like a bad seventh grade hazing. And once I learned it, it was great. Like I could not be more grateful for all of these experiences, good and bad, because they've made me stronger today and I can pass it on, hopefully. You know what I mean? So that's not an issue. I'm just saying that when I started, I sucked it up. We don't live in that template anymore. We don't have to suck it up. Their power doesn't have to come from pain. Their power can come from walking into a warm, supportive space that's like, bring it, balls out, and not balls out, but enjoying a ride together. And honestly, if guys really want to get laid from this work, be really respectful of women. It's a super turn on right now.
And my favorite male players are like dudes who come at this work from a place of emotion and passion and respect. And they do, like, no one's going to stop doing scenes about sex. Like, that's not what anything is even about. Like, it's coming at this work from a place of respect and recognizing that it's not just, like, jacking off your comedy boner and seeing who can, like, come the hardest. Like, it is,
and they can do that too.
They can do
on
that
their own
too.
Time, bless
yeah.
their heart. It's old and boring, but good luck with that. I mean, on their own time.
Yeah, I coach from a very feminist and feminine perspective. I hate gendering emotion, but we still live in a world that does that. So I'm playing by those rules right now. I force my players to tap into their honest emotional selves. I ask that, I will stop scenes when we get into places that are, where we're not exploring sexism or racism. We are just being sexist or racist. I have plenty of white dudes who have thanked me for that work. To go back to earlier, like the ability to learn from your failures. Like, I don't think that a lot of people are sort of treating this right now, the way things like blew up, as like this war where straight white dudes are cowering and fearing for their life. It's like, no, fuck off. That's not real. Like, no one is anti-white dude. We're just like anti-white dude hero worship, and where anti-white dude is the default human. Like,
but that was the landscape. You have to understand, that was the landscape. That was very much the landscape. Second City has had to work extremely hard to push diversity.
Yeah.
And every single new ethnicity or new, you know, or when women, have become far more in numbers. These are struggles. This is part of evolution. And if we are exploring the human condition, mm-hmm. this is part of it, good, bad, and ugly. So even though the part of you that says it took this incident to happen, this has been brewing for a long time. This female-centric and, you know, and people of color and LGBT and every and people with disabilities, everybody has been saying right now, this is time.
Oh, I agree. I've definitely felt, even since I've been in Chicago, over the last, I would say, 4 years, there's just been this surge of empowerment. And I don't want to say, like, we aren't really reclaiming anything because we never had it,
right.
but this, like, sort of staking our claim in this community and building a sort of a progressive subculture underneath the surface, that it took one leader saying one dumb thing to sort of pop it.
And I think anybody who wants to thrive and wants the people that they work with to thrive, again, should not feel threatened. Now, I don't care whether you're an improviser or you're an accountant at IBM or whatever. If you want to join hands with the people around you and succeed together, that requires the ability to look inward and think, like, how have I been misguided in the past? And, you know, what have I learned and what do I still need to learn?
And that awareness and that willingness to look inside yourself is something that we have, like, sort of historically identified as, like, a female trait. And I think this is why we're
bullshit.
Saying right now, like...
You were saying,
well,
bullshit?
Yeah, it is bullshit that we consider it that, but, like... you know, we lived in a world where, you know, women create and men destroy. And that's not because women are inherently creators and men are inherently destructive. It's because we have tiny little brains. And when we're told that these are the gender norms, we're like, oh yes, me be thing I was told to be. And I think this is why, like, as we start to, like, work together more and people are realizing, oh, being a whole complete human being that gets to look inward and, like, join hands, and that we don't have to, like, create battles to fight, like, things get better. And I think that's why we say the future is female, because this thing that we've just defined as female is what's making it better.
If we define it as female, I'm willing to accept it. Like, let's all be a little more female.
I have that sweatshirt. I bought it too big, but it's a great sweatshirt. Sorry, but here's the thing. If comedy is an exceptional teaching tool, one of the things it gets to do is put a spotlight on what's ridiculous. I mean, at Second City, we're dealing with social and political satire. So that I can always take a ludicrous improviser and turn them into a ludicrous character. So my teaching moment is not if I'm on stage with someone who I don't know, who goes, oh, messing does anything, and then goes beyond my miles away boundaries. I'm not going to stop him as an improviser and go, da-da-da-da-da. My character will easily make his character ludicrous because I will use, reuse, recycle, and repurpose everything to forward that scene, and it will still teach them, and it will still create comedy.
Is that how one way we can empower people?
Absolutely, because if
not
I just...
Not to stop it, but to
well,
adjust.
Well, here's the thing. If I'm in a classroom situation... I can show people how we can make
When do you make
course.
That call? When do you make that call? I'm going to cut this off.
Well, when I see an uncomfortable improviser. There's a difference between an uncomfortable character who's perfectly happy as an improviser and an uncomfortable improviser. An uncomfortable improviser has completely stopped us from enjoying the scene because we are concerned about that person, as well we should be. That's why you don't jump into somebody's arms if you're 400 pounds and that other person is 120 pounds. We're like... That's why we do slow-mo, to slow it down and taste our food, and for safety.
You mean if we get physical punching
part of,
and stuff like that, it will slow it down?
Part of personal safety now is going to include emotional safety. And that is why when you talk about, Laura, about triggers, it's something that, as a teacher, every day I learn something new. I had said a couple of weeks ago, I went, wow, I'm going to have to start talking a little more about triggers. I thought it was implied, because people always did come to me aside and say, hey, I've been dealing with this stuff right now. My mom recently died, or I've got a chronic disease, or I've been raped. I mean, I've heard it all, but they've always come to me. Now I realize I have to do a general announcement of this, so that, because maybe there were scores of people who didn't feel free to say that. Do you know what I mean?
Nadia, you were going to say something.
I think this conversation is very important, and I feel sad that there's not enough teachers that are doing this kind of work. I would love to see some kind of a perhaps institutionalized rule.
Sharna actually asked me to have an
ongoing, perhaps weekly group, for a drop-in group, maybe for students or improvisers, for teachers and coaches to explore that kind of
work. You know, you make a good point, because I've had situations where I don't know how to handle it in class. I've reached out to you. I've reached out to my therapist. And I think there's this part of, and thank God where I got it, I don't know, to be, if I need help in a classroom, to ask for help.
I appreciate that you did that, because, and I think in that moment, you kind of noticed, this is beyond my jurisdiction, which is why I said, why not be a therapist? Because then you would have been able to deal with the dark shit in your class.
Maybe, yes. Well, thank you. Thank you for the great advertisement for my class, by the way. but also, that we can't do this alone. You know, more than ever, things are changing, and people are going to be triggered. Because the other thing that I've seen in this expansion, and I've been teaching for a while, is it's not just an acting class. We're seeing people coming to improv later in life and for different reasons. So when we were taking classes, people would just, they would bow and scrape, they would do it because they wanted to get to Second City and then get to Saturday Night Live. That has changed. The population has changed as well.
Even the way you deal with sexuality has changed. People can go. Like I said, technology has changed everything.
Yes.
Even when I had my first phone, I guess to sext somebody would have probably taken an hour, as you have to go through three letters, you know, to get to the C.
You'll have to show me.
Yeah, I'll show you later.
Laura, what can we do? Because we have to wrap this up. What can we do? What things can we do, or one thing we can do to help the situation?
I don't have an action plan or a solid answer to that, but I think the first step is for people to really realize that to be aware of this in general, or triggers, whatever it is, doesn't mean you can't go to those dark places and scenes or to explore sexuality, any of that. That, in fact, if people are feeling more comfortable and more safe, those scenes will be so much better.
Mm-hmm.
But for people to really do that, there's going to be that segment of the population that has never had to think about being aware or respecting or providing safety for anyone else. And they're actually going to have to sacrifice, you know, the automatic power and the ease that they explore those situations with, and give that up to make other people comfortable. And I don't know if that's necessarily something they're going to want to do, but that's the only way forward with this.
Bravo. I think that's like the most important, concise thing that has been said in this whole conversation. And I think that speaks to all of this so well. Especially speaking to that fear that people have of like censoring content. Like, you don't censor content by creating safe spaces and by approaching things with respect. You just create more respectful content, more thoughtful content, which should be our goal. If we're teaching that, you know, comedy comes from truth, then why wouldn't you want the whole earnest truth?
Yeah, but some guy's going to say, well, the truth is guys treat women like shit. I'm just saying that might be the thing.
What about a character that does treat women like shit? How do you do that? Do we just cut that out?
You cut out the players that treat women like shit if they can't figure out how to treat women like humans. You don't cut out the characters. You don't cut out the storyline. You don't cut out the sex. You cut out the bad improvisers. Right now, we don't cut out mediocre, shitty asshole male improvisers. We put them on teams. We let them serve on bodies that create teams. We protect them. And I think what Laura is speaking to is we need to emphasize the importance of respect in this work. And we need to teach people how to relinquish a little bit of the power that they've been raised to feel entitled to.
Well, now I think a lot of people are feeling threatened by a perceived loss of power in the future, and are maybe even pushing a little more than they used to be out of a response of fear.
And that's why we have all these laws that are, well, I was going to say, that's why we have, 300 88 or however many bills about women's bodies being proposed in legislature because
they're terrified.
Privileged peoples are always terrified of losing that privilege. That's why, you know, white feminists are getting called out for not hearing the voices of women of color.
Right.
Because white women are just as guilty of holding on to that privilege and not wanting to let go of it.
Okay, we've got to wrap this up. I'm going to go through our panel here. One wish you hope for settle this problem, to further the solution.
When it comes down to it, I think in the history of oppressed people, that oppression has never been overcome by the group in power relinquishing it. You know, it's always been through struggle. And so I hope that this struggle continues because, that power will be broken down. And I hope it happens sooner rather than later. But I think it is happening, and I hope that trajectory continues.
Susan?
I don't have as much hope at this point as I am just certainly grateful for the conversation and the ability of I'm a pragmatic optimist, but I have, I don't have hope. I have a solid, good gut feeling that change is a-coming.
Laura, one wish.
In addition to conversation, just that people coming at this from different perspectives or different identities are going to help each other out and speak on behalf of others and raise up together.
My wish would be for the people in this community, especially people with power in this community, actually start striving to create work that is good and care as much as they say they care, because when they do actually care about creating the best work they can, then I think that these problems will be solved. I think that you'll get rid of problem people, you'll teach people who can be taught, and you'll empower the voices that need to be heard.
Nadia.
I feel extremely privileged to be able to do this work, both improv and therapy. And the way I see my job is just to help heal one person at a time.
Thank you so much. Ben, Susan, Laura, Julia. Nadia, thank you so much for joining us on this special edition of Improv Nerd. And there you have it, another episode of Improv Nerd is in the can. And I want to thank the good people at the Green Shirt Studio in Chicago for hosting this panel discussion. I'd also like to thank Sam Bowers, the director on this episode, and Dan Schipmacher, my producer. He's the one who makes it sound so slick and so professional. If it wasn't for Dan, you wouldn't be hearing my voice right now. If you want more information about me, Jimmy Corain, and my award-winning improv classes, The Artist Low Comedy, all you need to do is go to my website, jimmycorain.com. You can also sign up for my Improv Nerd blog. Each week, I'll send you out a new blog that will make you not only a better person, but a better improviser. Well, the better person is up to you. Follow us on social media. Go to our Improv Nerd Facebook page and like us because it really helps with my low self-esteem. Also, follow us at improv_nerd and Twitter, and go to our YouTube channel, which is Improv Nerd Podcast, all one word. We're also very fortunate and grateful to be part of a wonderful podcast collective out of Los Angeles called Feral Audio. They have some of the most unique and innovative and hilarious podcasts out there. People like Chelsea Peretti, Dan Harmon, Steve Agee, Todd Barry, Jimmy Corain, just to name a few. I love getting my name on that. Also, I'd like to thank both our sponsors of today's episode, that is the Improv Tonight app and the Harold Ramis Film School. And of course, I want to thank you for listening. And until next time, remember, walk, don't run.
Let's say Seinfeld was on an island and he was blowing Boris Karloff. What would that be like?
It might go something like this. Oh, Mr. Karloff, I loved you in Frankenstein, and I love giving you a blowjob. Why, Mr. Seinfeld, I love having you